I feel like you just spent over $1,000 on this state-of-the-art multicolor 3D printer, right?
Yeah, people drop a ton of money on these things.
Exactly. And then you get it home, you set it up, and you realize it spends more time building a literal tower of garbage than the actual model you wanted.
It is the ultimate single nozzle tax, honestly.
It really is. Picture this. You just spent, 2 hours in your slicer software. You're meticulously painting this beautiful, complex, multicolor model.
Like a tabletop miniature or something.
Yeah, a miniature with intricate armor, or maybe you're adding all these complex soluble supports to a mechanical part with impossible overhangs.
Right, something really ambitious.
So you finally hit slice, you watch that little progress bar fill up, and then you see the print summary, and your heart just sinks.
Because of the waste.
Yes. You're looking at 50 grams of filament for your actual model, and like 120 grams just for the purge tower.
It is so painful to see those numbers.
Oh, and a snappy 3-hour print has magically turned into this 11-hour marathon. It's just the universal pain of the intermediate 3D printing
We
hobbyist.
have all been there,
Yeah.
just staring at the build plate, wondering why this automation feels so incredibly wasteful.
Totally. So, welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is to unpack the shared physical mechanics behind both multicolor printing and soluble supports.
Because they actually share the exact same bottleneck.
Right. Whether you're chasing pretty colors for a display piece or you're trying to dissolve your way out of impossible geometry for a prototype, you are fighting the exact same hidden enemy.
The single nozzle filament swap.
Exactly. If we can help you understand exactly what's happening inside that hood end, you can budget your time and your material properly before you ever press print.
Which is so crucial for your sanity.
Yeah. We're pulling from a really great stack of sources today. We've got a Monday Hub article from Printera 3D, which covers when multicolor AMS printing actually pays off.
That one is super detailed.
It is. And we have a companion Thursday support article breaking down PVA versus HIPS soluble supports. Plus, we're layering in a few specific engineering data sheets from Ultimaker and Bamboo Lab.
Just to get the hard numbers.
Yeah.
Because the numbers are what actually dictate success or failure on your build plate.
Absolutely.
Like, we can't just talk about software settings here. We have to look at the physical reality. Before we even get to the chemistry of dissolving plastics, everything really comes down to the physics of the nozzle itself.
Okay, let's unpack this because I think people misunderstand how a Hotend actually
I'll
works.
walk time.
It's essentially a melt zone, right?
All
It's
right.
this tiny, highly pressurized chamber where solid plastic turns into molten goo.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
I always compare it to painting with a wet paintbrush. So if you're painting with a thick black ink and you suddenly want to switch to pure white, you can't just dip that same brush into the white ink immediately.
Well, of course not. You ruin the white.
Exactly. If you do, you get this streaky, muddy, gray mess
Yeah.
on your canvas. You have to aggressively scrub those bristles clean first
Right. You have to flush all that black pigment out.
before the white can take over, and
Yeah.
the 3D printer has to do the exact same thing, but it's scrubbing with molten plastic.
That paintbrush analogy is perfect for visualizing the internal geometry of the Hotend.
It really helped it click for me.
Yeah, and let's put some specific numbers to it. So a standard 0.4 millimeter Hotend holds roughly 50 to 100 cubic millimeters of molten plastic in its melt zone at any given time.
Wow, okay.
So when a filament swap happens, the machine retracts the old color, it cuts it, and feeds the new one down. But that 50 to 100 cubic millimeters of the old material is still just sitting right there.
Just coating the walls of the chamber.
Exactly. So the first few centimeters of the new plastic are entirely contaminated with the old color.
Right.
And this contaminated plastic has to be physically flushed out of the nozzle. The machine pushes it into a purge tower or a purge object, or maybe into the model's infill.
Which means the volume of waste you're dealing with is heavily dictated by color contrast.
Oh, absolutely. Contrast is everything.
Because if I'm going from a light yellow to a dark black, the black pigment overpowers the yellow almost instantly.
Yeah, that transition is really cheap.
But going from dark to light, like black to white, is incredibly expensive. You have to flush a massive amount of material to stop the white from looking pink or gray.
Contrast absolutely dictates the purge volume, but we also have to look at the frequency of the swaps and the mechanical movement required to execute them.
Oh man, the mechanical ballet.
Yes. Think about what the printer actually has to do to change colors. It's incredibly
It
tedious.
takes forever.
The tool head stops printing. It parks itself over the chute. The extruder snips the filament. The motors reel it all the way back up the PTFE tube to the spool.
Right.
Then the system grabs a new spool, feeds it all the way down the tube, waits for the hot end temperature to stabilize, and then spends a minute literally pooping out waste plastic.
Just spitting it out.
And it has to do that for every single color change on every single layer.
It's mind-boggling when you watch it. Like, a densely patterned figurine with 10 color changes per layer can easily generate purge waste that weighs several times more than the actual model.
Exactly. And you aren't doing anything wrong in your settings. It's just the unavoidable physical reality of a single hot end.
So if the mechanics of a single nozzle are this unforgiving, you know, why did companies choose to force up to 4 colors through one nozzle in the first place?
Well, it's about accessibility and cost, really.
Let's look at the hardware we're relying on to automate this massive scrubbing operation, specifically the Bamboo Lab AMS ecosystem.
Which is incredibly popular right now.
Very popular. It was introduced back in May 2022 alongside the X1 Carbon, and it completely changed the hobby.
It really did.
If you look at the original enclosed box, it features 4 slots, 2 little desiccant compartments, and a built-in humidity sensor.
It was a massive leap forward because it took a process that used to require constant manual intervention or wildly complex tool-changing systems and turned it into a hands-off, consumer-friendly experience.
But that accessibility definitely came with a lot of user assumptions.
Oh, for sure. So many assumptions.
I see this all the time online, and I want to clear it up. Makers get this sealed original AMS box. They see the digital humidity sensor on the screen, and they just assume this thing is actively baking their filament dry.
Yes.
They throw a soggy, stringy spool of peat sheet in there and think AMS is going to fix it while they print.
It's incredible how widespread that misconception really is.
Right.
Let's look at the hardware specs. The original AMS has no internal heater whatsoever. Zero.
Not at all.
It only passively keeps filament dry using whatever desiccant you load into those compartments.
It's just a box.
It's essentially a very fancy dry box with feeder motors. Mm. If you want active heating to actually bake moisture out of a wet spool, you have to look at their newer AMS 2 Pro unit. Mm-hmm. That one does have an internal heater that goes up to 65 degrees Celsius.
See, that distinction is so critical for your daily printing success.
Absolutely critical.
If you're running hygroscopic materials, you know, things like PETG or nylon that absorb water from the air like a sponge.
You're terrible for that.
They aren't going to survive long in the open air AMS light that comes with the A1 series.
Yeah, well, they'll be ruined in hours.
And even in the original enclosed AMS, you still need to dry those spools in a dedicated active dryer first before you load them. The passive box just maintains the dryness. It doesn't create it.
Exactly. And that specific hardware limitation, you know, how we handle moisture and heat, becomes the absolute deciding factor when we move from printing multiple colors to printing soluble supports.
Oh, right. Because it's the exact same automated swap mechanics.
Yes. The same system that gives us a beautiful 4-color dragon also allows us to print incredibly complex, impossible engineering geometries using supports that just melt away.
But the challenge completely shifts here, right? We aren't worrying about white plastic looking a little gray anymore.
No, the stakes are much higher.
We're suddenly worrying about chemical compatibility, molecular bonds, and melt temperatures.
Which is a whole different ballgame.
Which actually raises a huge question for me. If water is so easy to deal with, why are we dealing with all these different complicated chemical solvents?
That is the million-dollar question.
Like, why didn't the industry just invent one universal plastic that supports everything and then melts away nicely in a bucket of tap water?
Yeah.
It seems like a massive step backward to use anything else.
Well, because the fundamental laws of thermodynamics just won't allow a universal material.
Really?
Yeah. Different primary building plastics require vastly different temperatures to extrude and bond properly. And your support material has to survive those exact same temperatures without degrading.
Okay, that makes sense.
Let's look at PVA, or polyvinyl alcohol. According to the Ultimaker technical datasheet, PVA has a melting temperature of 175.4 degrees Celsius. But more importantly, it has a glass transition temperature of 58.4 degrees Celsius.
Okay, let's translate that for a second.
Sure.
The glass transition temperature is basically the point where the plastic stops being hard and structurally sound and turns into a soft, rubbery gummy bear.
Right. That's a perfect way to visualize it. Below 58 degrees, it's solid. Above it, it's a gummy bear.
Got it.
The massive benefit of PVA, of course, is that it dissolves in plain, ordinary water and is fully biodegradable. You just drop the part in the sink and walk away.
Right, so that's the dream scenario. Just turn on the tap. What's the alternative for the high-temperature stuff, though?
The primary alternative is HIPS, which stands for high-impact polystyrene.
Okay.
It's essentially standard polystyrene blended with rubber additives to make it less brittle. Now, look at the thermal requirements for HIPS.
What are they?
PRUSA recommends running it with a 225 to 255 degrees Celsius nozzle and 100 to 110 degrees Celsius heated bed.
Wow, that is hot.
It happens to be the exact same extreme temperature range required for printing ABS.
But
unlike PVA, HIPS doesn't care about water at all. It requires a chemical solvent like limone or acetone to dissolve.
Honestly, limone sounds completely terrible to work with in a home workshop.
It's not ideal.
It's an oily organic solvent. From what I've read, it requires serious ventilation. It leaves a greasy residue on your parts.
Yeah, it can be messy.
And your workshop ends up smelling like you're running an industrial margarita machine for weeks on end, but you can't drink any of it.
That is a very accurate description of the smell.
Plus, you have to dispose of the hazardous waste carefully. Why not just force PVA to work with ABS and avoid the hassle of chemical solvents entirely? I'd rather just use water and tweak my slicer settings.
I get the appeal of plain water. I really do. But you simply can't out-tweak chemistry.
Really? There's no workaround.
No. If you try to run PVA at 250 degrees Celsius to match an ABS print, the PVA will literally cook in the nozzle.
Oh, yucks.
It degrades, it carbonizes, and it permanently clogs your HOTEN before it even lays down a single support interface. It just can't survive the heat.
Wow. Okay.
So here's the decision guide you need for your workshop. Reach for PVA when your main material is PLA and you only have a bucket of lukewarm water at your disposal.
Keep it simple.
Exactly. That's the safest pairing with zero solvents and zero fumes.
Okay, PLA pairs with PVA. The temperatures match up, nice and simple.
But you must stick with HIPS dissolved in limone when you're supporting large ABS models.
Because of the temperature.
Well, the reason they pair so well isn't just about surviving the hot nozzle. It's about how they behave as they cool down.
Oh, shrinkage.
Right. HIPS shrinks at a very similar rate to ABS. If you used a support material with a wildly different shrinkage rate, the interface layer would warp and tear the model apart during the print.
That makes total sense.
HIPS keeps those large ABS structures perfectly stable. You just have to remember to budget the 24-hour drying time for chemical smoothing that PRUSA quotes in their documentation.
Yeah.
You just can't rush the post-processing when solvents are involved.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We know PLA pairs with PVA and ABS pairs with HIPS. But what happens when you want to print PTG with soluble supports? Because when you cross-reference the manufacturer documentation on this specific pairing, it's a complete mess of contradictions.
It is the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters. The guidance is completely fractured depending on who you ask.
It really is. Like, look at Bamboo Lab's general support guide. They state point blank that PVA is not compatible as a support for PTG.
Right. They say avoid it entirely.
Don't even try it. Then, if you dig into the manual for their H2D printer, they explicitly warn you against printing PVA and PTG at the same time from the left and right nozzles.
Yep.
Meanwhile, PRUSA recommends a different material entirely for PTG, steering their users toward a specialized material called BBOH.
Well, remember that glass transition temperature we talked about for PVA?
To 58.4 degrees Celsius.
Exactly. The gummy bear stage.
Right.
Now think about the standard bed temperature required to keep PTG stuck to the build plate.
Wait, PTG needs a 70-degree heated bed?
You see the problem now.
Oh, wow. The bed is reheating 70 degrees of ambient heat right up into the nozzle area.
Yes.
So the PVA is turning into a gummy bear while it's just sitting there waiting to be printed.
That's the mechanical reality. And it's exactly why the documentation contradicts itself. Compatibility depends entirely on the machine architecture.
Because different machines handle the heat differently.
Exactly. Manufacturers are writing guides for their specific hardware. When you use an AMS system, it pushes everything through one shared hot end.
Right. They all take the same path.
That means the thermal overlap between your main material and your support material is absolutely critical. They're sharing the exact same melt zone. The hot end has to heat up to 240 degrees for the PTG, which cooks the PVA during the swap.
And even if you have dual nozzles, like on the H2D, that 70-degree bed heat is still rising up and melting the PVA in the second nozzle before it's even extruded.
Exactly. Now, a true dual extrusion machine, like a large format IDEX system where the print heads park far away from the heated bed when they aren't active, keeps the melt zones completely separate.
They stay out of the heat zone.
Right. They stay safe from ambient heat. The PVA stays in its own cooler nozzle, and the PDG stays in its own hotter nozzle. They only interact on the actual build plate.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
That's why an Ultimaker data sheet might say PVA works with PDG on their dual extrusion machines, while a Bamboo Lab AMS guide says it will fail catastrophically.
They're both right.
Yes, based on their respective hardware architectures.
Wow. And, you know, we can't talk about PVA failing without bringing the conversation right back to the AMS hardware limits we discussed earlier. The moisture threat.
Well, the moisture is a killer.
This isn't just about bad print quality. It's about hardware damage.
The moisture threat is the number one reason soluble supports fail for home users. PVA isn't just a little sensitive to humidity. It's incredibly hygroscopic.
It just sucks water in.
It drinks water out of the air at a molecular level. The documentation notes that in a normal room, PVA absorbs enough moisture to completely ruin your print quality in just 1 to 3 hours.
Just 1 to 3 hours? That is wild.
It's barely any time at all.
That means if you're running a 14-hour print on an open-air bed or using the open-air AMS light, your PVA is basically ruined before the print is even half finished.
Which is why the drying requirements are so incredibly strict. It must be actively dried at 80 degrees Celsius for 8 to 12 hours before you use it.
80 degrees for 12 hours?
Yes, and then printed directly from a heated dry box. We have to talk about what actually happens inside the machine when it's wet, though.
What happens?
When wet PVA hits the hot end, the trapped water instantly boils into steam. You'll actually hear it crackling and popping as it extrudes.
Hygroscopic crampies.
Exactly. Leaving gaps and bubbles in your support structure.
But the real nightmare is what happens in the gears, right?
Oh, the gears, yes.
If you try to run damp, soft PVA through the AMS light, it doesn't just string, it softens.
It turns into mush.
The metal feeder gears bite into it, they squish it into a flat pancake and jam the entire gear assembly.
It's a disaster.
Suddenly, you aren't just dealing with a failed print. You're taking apart the AMS hub with an Allen key on your workbench, trying to dig out a chunk of rubbery plastic.
Nobody wants to do that on a weekend.
Mm.
So we know that both color swaps and soluble supports share this massive physical tax.
Right.
They waste material during the purge, they add hours to the print time with the mechanical ballet of swapping, and they introduce multiple points of failure with moisture clogs and thermal degradation.
It's a lot to manage.
So how do we actually mitigate the damage? How do we budget for this before we hit slice?
We have to look at the raw economics. The data shows that a standard multicolor print uses 15 to 25% more filament than a single color version, just in purge waste.
That's a huge markup.
It is, and it takes 30 to 50% longer to complete.
And for soluble supports, it's even slower. We really have to talk about volumetric speed here.
Oh, right, the flow rate.
Prusa actually caps the volumetric speed of PVA at a crawling 4 cubic millimeters per second.
4 cubic millimeters?
Yes. For comparison, normal PLA prints at about 15 cubic millimeters per second on modern machines.
Let's put that in perspective for you. At 4 cubic millimeters a second, the printer isn't just printing slowly, it's barely oozing.
It is so slow.
You're taking a blazing fast modern Core XY machine and turning it back into a sluttish 2014 desktop printer the moment that PVA touches the build plate.
It's painful to watch.
Plus, a single material swap to PVA requires purging up to 240 cubic millimeters just to ensure clean adhesion without any old plastic ruining the layer bond. It's agonizing.
It really is agonizing. So how do we outsmart the system?
Okay, listen up, because this is the most important part of today's deep dive. I want to give you one highly actionable tip that you can use on your printer this week to fight back against this waste.
Let's hear it.
Before you press print on your next multicolor or supported model, open up Bamboo Studio or whatever slicer you use. Go find the flushing volume matrix that it calculates for each filament swap.
That big chart of numbers.
Right. You can actually route that purge waste into your model's infill instead of sending it all to the purge tower.
Oh, that's smart.
By hiding the ugly, muddy transition plastic inside the hollow interior parts of your model, you can cut your wasted filament immediately without sacrificing the clean exterior look.
That is a brilliant way to optimize a single nozzle system. The slicer does the math for you. You just have to check the box.
Exactly. Just check the box.
And I'll add a crucial tip for those using soluble supports. You should absolutely be using the soluble interface setting in your slicer.
Soluble interface, right.
Don't print the entire massive support tree out of expensive, slow-printing PVA. Use your cheap, fast PLA or PTG for the bulk of the support tower.
Just build the scaffolding with the cheap stuff.
Yes, and Configure the slicer to only swap to the expensive PVA or HIPS for the very last contact layers that actually touch the model.
That makes perfect sense.
You get the perfect, clean, removable overhangs, but you save a fortune in soluble material and you skip hours of print time.
So what does this all mean for you? The automated filament swap is an incredible tool. It brings professional, industrial capabilities right to our home desktops.
It really is amazing tech.
But it isn't magic. It's a strictly mechanical process that's governed by the hard rules of melt zones, color contrast, and chemical thermodynamics.
You can't cheat physics.
No, you can't. If you respect those physical rules and you prepare your filament properly, you get gorgeous results. If you ignore them, you get a clogged toad end, jammed gears, and a massive pile of expensive plastic spaghetti.
This raises an important question, though, and I really want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Okay, what is it?
We've spent this whole time discussing how to manage the massive cost, time, and failure risk of every single automated filament swap.
Right, optimizing the paint away.
But at what point does it make more sense as a designer to simply step back, rethink your geometry, and split your complex model into separate, perfectly flat parts?
Oh, wow. Just avoid the swap entirely.
Yes. Parts that print incredibly fast in a single color, without supports, and just snap or glue together mechanically.
That is a fantastic point. Sometimes the absolute smartest 3D printing technique is simply designing the model to avoid the filament swap entirely.
Exactly. Work smarter, not harder.
It's definitely something to think about next time you're staring down the barrel of an 11-hour slice preview. For the full numbers, see printerf3d.com. We want our 3D printers to be simple, to just work flawlessly every time we hit print.
But the truth is, the physics inside that melt zone are always going to require a bit of respect and planning.
Very true. Good luck with your prints this week, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.